looking back, looking forward. Once again, we're going to take a look at what took place in the General Assembly, what laws are passed, and what's going to happen with the budget. And with this being the anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court Dobbs decision, what is ahead for reproductive health for women? It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille. Stay tuned as we have with us Senator Angela Williams-Graves, representing the 21st Senate District here in Norfolk, Virginia. Welcome back. It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille. Once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us, as you always do, every Sunday, as we broadcast from none other than the campus of the Norfolk State University, home of the Spartan Nation, from WNSB Hot 91, the soul of VA, where you listen to where we bring movers, shakers, and policymakers to you to discuss issues important to the community, an initiative of the Center for African American Public Policy here at Norfolk State University. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm trying to get used to this weather. Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? But whatever the case may be, I'm just thank goodness that pollen season almost ending. We hope that you've had a phenomenal week, and we hope that the things that you've done just a little bit to remember others and make a difference in your community, because ultimately, that's what it's all about. Now, as you know, we've looked at the General Assembly and laws that have gone into effect, and we've had many legislators and community advocates to talk about what took place during that time period. And of course, you've seen the news. You've seen the General Assembly and the Senate and the House and the governor, and they're going back and forth with each other. But at the end of the day, the question becomes, who's advocating for you? And what's going to happen come July 1st when the new laws take place? Will we have a budget? What are some of the laws that are going to impact your life? And not only that, but what are the things here in the city of Norfolk, in Hampton Roads, and the Commonwealth of Virginia that's going to impact us? So today, I'm so excited this morning to have with us none other than my friend, my sister, who is a true public servant, a servant leader, I like to say, for the people of Norfolk. And that's none other than Senator Angela Williams-Graves. Senator Graves, how are you this morning?
I am well. How are you?
Well, look, I'm doing great, you know, blessed, highly favored, and just thank God for the opportunity, you know, to do what we do. But also, I thank God that we made it through another legislative session, right?
Yes. Yes and yes.
That part. You know, it's funny, you know, you and I, we see each other in the halls, the General Assembly in the Capitol, and we, you know, in passing, and we talk about it. But I don't think people really understand just how, you know, being a public servant is great, but just the wear and tear on your bodies and your mind and your family, you know, just going up and down the road and engaging in I would like to say, high-level discussion. Sometimes it's not. where you're debating with colleagues back and forth on the other aisle to see it your way. And sometimes those on the side of your aisle, right?
True.
You know, but I just want to check on you. How are you doing?
I am well. I have had a little bit of time to get reacclimated to being home. I am back in a familiar space where I have a 4-year term. And so that's good. And I get to get back to work in selling houses, which is what I love. And so I'm good. And my husband is happy because I'm cooking dinner. So all is well.
All is well in the Williams Gray's household. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, look, that's what we like to hear, that our public servants are really doing well personally so that they can now take up the burden of the community and advocate for them. So, you know, let's segue first into how this first session went for you. And I say first session, even though it's not your first session in Richmond, but first session as the senator from the city of Norfolk.
It went well. I have to say there's a little bit of a learning curve. But I think my largest or my biggest learning curve was probably when I went into the House, because I was used to being able to get things done in a more immediate fashion. And in the Senate, or in the General Assembly, I should say, not much happens immediately. And so I was used to that. I got used to that. And then just doing things a little bit differently procedurally in the Senate was you know, was different. The schedule of committees was a little bit different. And then a couple of new committee assignments that I got this year were different than what I had had in previous years in the House. So it was definitely a learning experience for me, but I really enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it.
Absolutely. And again, it was a new session for you as being in the Senate, mm-hmm. but it was also a new historic legislative session, you know, with the new leadership that we have in the House and also mm-hmm. in the Senate. Tell us a little bit about how, you know, the impact of that going into the Senate and your old the House of Delegates mm-hmm. and seeing, mm-hmm. you know, Hampton Roads, Portsmouth's very own, standing there representing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will tell you, it gave those of us with brown skin a tremendous sense of pride to have so many folks who look like us in leadership, starting with the election of the first ever Black Speaker of the House, Speaker Scott, and then rolling down to what people may or may not know, the first ever Black President Pro Tem of the Senate. This is her second round as the President Pro Tem of the Senate, in Senator Louise Lucas. She is also the first woman, and I believe the first Black, to serve as the chair of Senate Finance and Appropriations. And then we also had Delegate Luke Torian, who was the chair of Appropriations and Finance on the House side. We had Marcia Price on the House side, who was the chair of Privileges and Elections, uh-huh. which is super important. And then in the matching side, Senator Aaron Rouse, who was the chair of
Privileges and Elections here. Yeah.
Privileges and Elections on our side, as well as having Senator Locke as the caucus chair and whatnot. And so it was really for folks who I would tell people all the time, especially those who had young people, make sure you bring your kids to the House of Delegates, primarily those individuals who mentor young Black men, because I believe it's important for our young Black men to see who and what they can become. And then bring them over to the Senate to watch how Black women run the world and see all the Black girl magic. But I think that it's very important for young people to see who they can become. And it gives them an opportunity to be able to dream big when they actually see it.
You know, speaking of Black girl magic, you know, first of all, I've never heard anyone put it just that way. But, you know, just visualize it and see it. I agree. You know, how what Black men can do and then how women run the world on the Senate side. And mm-hmm. and you know what? It's interesting because when we look at the state of the Virginia Legislative Black Caucus, the largest amount of elected officials, African-American, yeah. And not just African-American, but also brown, other ethnicities in the history of the mm-hmm. Commonwealth. And mm-hmm. They were in the election just didn't take place in majority African American or Black districts, but it took place in mixed districts as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it really shows you who the people of the Commonwealth really mm-hmm. trust, you know, mm-hmm. to make decisions mm-hmm. for them. I mean, mm-hmm. that speaks volumes.
And that they value the opinions of everyone. It's not just the opinions of white male landowners anymore. It's the opinions of women. It's the opinions of those who are Asian, Hispanic, like the AAPI community. We also have folks who are from countries I can't pronounce, yeah. Who are serving in elected office, and they were elected by a body of their peers, and wow. not just peers being people who are of the same race, but people who respect your work, your body of work in the community, and who you have common values with. And those folks are elected just like I was elected. Everybody that voted for me wasn't a Black female.
That's right.
You know? So it says a lot about our Commonwealth. And if you look at the General Assembly, especially on the Democratic side of the aisle, you will see that diversity, excellence, and inclusion
That DEI, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you know, playing a big role.
On some sides, it's a good word. On the other sides, it's a bad word, right?
I know. I know. They'll be okay.
They will. Now, when you talk about Black Girl Magic, I think the city of Norfolk is probably the best example of that. In the city of Norfolk, we have a record number of African American and also a Hispanic representing mm-hmm. the people here in mm-hmm. Norfolk, but not just African American, but African American women. We have mm-hmm. yourself as the senator for the entire city of Norfolk.
And Pretty much.
You know, we have mm-hmm. Delegate Jackie Glass, who is in her second mm-hmm. term as a delegate, and Delegate mm-hmm. Benita Anthony, who's in her first mm-hmm. term, who also represents Norfolk State University mm-hmm. In mm-hmm. her district. You know, as you being the mentor, right, mm-hmm. to these other, or the senior to these other women, first of all, talk about how that Black Girl Magic, you see it here in Norfolk, and how impactful that is.
I would say that it is delegation magic, really, because we have an incredible delegation in the Commonwealth, in the city of Norfolk, with individuals who are really dedicated to helping the people and who really love people. I don't believe that you can do this job effectively if you don't like people. I don't believe you can do this job excellently if you don't love them.
Right.
And I believe that we have a delegation that loves people and really cares about the quality of life that they have. And so it's very interesting to me because they have coined me the dean of the delegation, and that's just this is like my third year in the General Assembly, but it's my 14th year in elected office. And so I have been elected longer than any of the members of our delegation.
Wow.
And so I take that very seriously. And my goal is to give them the advice that I didn't get when I came into office, to give them the help that I didn't get when I came into office, to show them where the paper clips are buried and where the bathroom is.
Where the bathroom is. Listen. You know? I joke around with that real quick. I joke around with that with new representative. I said, have you found where the bathroom was?
That part. And, you know, also to help them to understand that they get the opportunity to legislate their way. Every legislator is different, and how we legislate and engage with the public is different, and that we are not in competition. We all serve our constituencies, and we're not in competition, and that we are here to support one another. And if we can do that, we don't always have to agree with each other either. But if we can do that, if we can support each other and we can agree to disagree when we have disagreements without being disagreeable, then the citizens of Norfolk will benefit from that.
Wow. Wow. It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Clavel, and you're listening to Looking Back, Looking Forward, the General Assembly Review, and What Do We See Ahead? Joining us, we have with us my good friend and sister, Senator Angela Williams-Grays, who represents the 21st Virginia Senate District here in the city of Norfolk. Today, we're talking about legislation that's made an impact here in the Commonwealth and what's going to affect us starting July 1st. Senator Graves, you know, when we talk about politics, it's really the process to get to what's important, and that's laws and public policy. You know, mm-hmm. can you give us just talk about, and this is whatever you would like to, one or two pieces of legislation that you've championed that's going to really make an impact here, or that passed, or maybe something that you champion or actually supported that didn't pass, and the reasons why it was so important to have mm-hmm. that come about?
So that I love the question, because there are a lot of things that I championed that didn't pass that I thought were so meaningful. And I'll give you just a couple of those in tidbits. We do have a housing shortage problem, not just in Norfolk and not just in the Hampton Roads area, but in the Commonwealth and across the United States.
Wow.
And I championed two bills that were technically, they died, but we call them continued to 2025. But one of the bills would have been to give a seller's tax credit to anyone selling their property, whether it be their primary residence or whether it be a rental property. If they were selling it to a buyer who was going to occupy it as a primary residence, then, or if it was multi-unit, they would be occupying at least one of the units in that multi-unit property. If they were going to sell the property to an owner-occupant, there would be up to a $5,000 tax credit for that seller. Now, what that was just designed to do was to incent the seller to sell to someone who was going to live in the property, as opposed to some of these outside, out-of-town buyers who turn a lot of our properties into rentals. And that one had a pretty big price tag on it, and it got continued to 2025. In essence, it died. The other piece of legislation that I felt like was very important was a tax credit to developers for converting commercial property to residential property.
Wow.
Because we have commercial buildings that are half or three quarters of the way vacant. And because, you know, since COVID, a lot of folks are working from home. They have not returned to the office full time the way that they had prior to COVID. And so at some point, we can't just dumb down the price, but we have to increase supply, right? So supply and demand, one of the two things I think I still remember from economics.
And, that's right. Very important. Very important principles.
That part. And so I felt like it was important to do some things that would create supply for the demand that we have. Now, there were a couple of bills that were vetoed by the governor. We had a bill that was a statute of limitations on court costs and fines, where I don't know if people realize this, but if you are caught in the criminal justice system, you are screwed. And Virginia makes it so you are screwed because they can collect on court costs and fines for up to 60 years criminal side.
60 years?
60.
Are people living that long? To collect?
I know, right? That whole part, and it is a proverbial noose around people's necks when they are discharged, when they are released from incarceration, and now they have this weight. And not only that, the second bill, and these two kind of go together. The second bill was to adjust the collections period for when folks could be sent to collections. So not only can the Commonwealth of Virginia collect on court costs and fines for 60 years, they can also send you to collections while you are incarcerated.
Wow.
Yeah, let that part sink in.
So you have no way to pay it.
Exactly. You have no way to pay it. And not only does it go to collections while you're incarcerated, it also incurs whatever the 17, 18, 19, 20% collection fee is.
Oh, my God.
So now your debt is more. You come out of prison, out of jail, owing more money than you went in there owing, plus court costs and collections. So the statute of limitations bill would have reduced the statute of limitations to 10 years from the date of release. Okay? So that would have made that bill, that would have put that bill in parity with the statute of limitations for civil court costs and fine collection. Okay, so we would have had some parity there. And then the collections period for when someone could be sent to collections was moved from 90 days from the date of judgment, which is in essence the day you go to jail, to 180 days from the day you are released. So it gives you an opportunity to get out of jail, out of prison, get yourself together, possibly get a job, or at least enter into a payment plan. And as long as you're in the payment plan and you make your payments, then you don't ever have to go to collections. That's what that bill would have done. Governor, in my opinion, doesn't see humanity in people who are incarcerated, really doesn't see second chances for people who are incarcerated, and he vetoed those bills. I got two more. One is a bill, Senate Bill 515. It is a weapons in hospitals bill. That was a bill that I championed with Delegate Hernandez. Mm-hmm. And we put that bill forward because what people don't know is that the hospital goes on lockdown several times a week, sometimes several times a day, especially over the weekend, for weapons, not just guns, but knives, hatchets, machetes, all kinds of stuff that comes into hospitals not from people who are working there, but from folks that are coming in. And if you simply think about the fact that you've got nurses in there and they are handling IVs, right, and they're trying to find the vein, they should not be concerned because of a glaring code blue, code red, code whatever, because whatever the code is for a person with a weapon or lockdown comes across the loudspeaker. And we've got people coming in there to visit folks. We have people coming in there, you know, for procedures. We have people who weren't there, from the janitor to the CEO in a hospital. You should feel safe, and you should be safe. And so this bill was designed to make it a class one misdemeanor for anyone bringing a weapon into a hospital or an institution where they are treating the mentally ill. And our governor put a horrible amendment on it, which we rejected and reconvened. And now it is on his desk to do the right thing or do nothing by May 17th. And if he does nothing by May 17th, the bill in its original form will just go into law. So if he doesn't act by May 17th on bills where the amendments were rejected, then they will just go into law without his signature, which is fine. Right. I mean, that's okay. And then lastly, our bill, Senate Bill 517, removing the Daughters of the Confederacy in their tax exemption code. That bill was a bill the governor put other amendments on. Those ridiculous amendments. And we rejected those amendments and sent it back to him. And again, if he does nothing, it just simply goes into law without his signature. But we feel like that where you spend your money is where your priorities are. And we're not trying to erase anybody's history, but we're also not trying to do is celebrate racism and slavery and Confederacy times. We're not trying to celebrate that. Right. And we're certainly not trying to give it a tax break.
That difference, I mean, that's a very small difference, but it's a huge difference, especially when you talk about where do we put our very important and limited resources. I mean, we don't have unlimited resources here in the Commonwealth, which is why we have the budget debate. You know, so understanding history and understanding what really matters, you know, that's why it's important to have individuals that are representing the community and advocating for them. You know, speaking of the budget, you know, as the raging Cajun said, it's all about the economy, stupid. You know, it boils down to money as well. You know, those are what you just talked about for our public. Those were various laws that will go into effect and some that will not. July 1st. And so those that won't, of course, I know the senators are going to bring them back and do it again. But the budget. And well, right now, we don't have a budget. It was agreed during reconvene that we come back and do it again during special session in May. So give us an idea of what we, first of all, why we don't have a budget, and give us an idea of what we can expect to see in May.
Well, the governor made 233 amendments to the budget, which is the highest number since 2000.
Just 233?
He made the amendments. And I'll say those were 233 amendments, period, not just to the budget, but a significant number of those were budgetary amendments in terms of line items and things of that nature. And one of the things that we wanted to do was to modernize the tax code. So with the taxing of digital downloads on businesses don't pay a tax that if you go into a store and buy the same digital product tangibly, you have to pay a sales tax on it. It creates an imbalance between those brick and mortar retailers that we claim we love so much, but we are quick to get on Amazon and order some stuff. You know, we claim we love the retailers and we don't know why they're going out of business. Well, part of the reason why they're going out of business is because they can't compete with the fact that if you buy something online and digitally download it, or you're watching and streaming online, you don't have to pay, you know, sales tax on it. And so that was one of the things that the governor actually proposed. And then when we brought it back to him, he was like, no, I'm not doing it, which was ridiculous. The second reason was we had a historic investment in education. We put $541 million into K K through 12 in teacher pay alone, just to give a 3% raise to teachers this year and next year. We put $370 million into our high poverty schools. Here's the thing. You cannot starve resources from anything and expect for it to still function at its optimal capacity. And so when the governor wants to gut public education, when he wants to gut HBCU funding, which is, you know, historically low, when he wants to even other higher educate institutions of higher education in general, when you want to gut education, and you can't then complain that you don't have a well-rounded or well-versed workforce. You haven't taught them anything.
That's right.
So if you haven't taught people anything, how in the world are they supposed to know anything, you know? And so that was something that was very important. The other piece of our budget was raises for state employees. That was another $545 million. And what people don't necessarily realize is that when we do raises, it's not just the straight 3%, right? We've got to do all the matching for FICA and all those folks. We've also got to do the matching for their retirement funds as well. So it's not just, people will say, well, why is it so much? It's a lot because whenever there is an increase in the base salary, there are all these other things that are tagged along to it that the employer is responsible for paying. And in this case, the employer is the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Wow.
We also had $101 million in the budget for toll relief. So
There were
so many amendments to the budget that the House and Senate said, you know what, we're just going to, and the administration, let's just scrap this and start from scratch and look at, ideally, I'm going to figure, because I'm not a budget conferee, they're looking at what do we agree on. Let's start there. Let's start on our points of interest. And then from what we agree on, now let's look at what we have a little bit of trouble with. And then let's look at what we adamantly disagree on. And that's how we can, by a process of elimination, come to a budget. Now, there's nothing to say that we're going to have a budget in special session. I hope that we do, because the budget is how we pay our bills. And a lot of those bills are not just tied to organizations. They are tied to people, and a government shutdown is not something that is beneficial to the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Absolutely not. And to that point, I'll put a period right there as relates to what took place. Now, in our final minute, of course, we're going back in May, and of course, we'll have a budget. We'll have something there. But
we'll have something.
But we have a very important election coming up this year. You know, it seems like we have one every year, which we do in the Commonwealth. You know,
we do.
Talk to our citizens a little bit about, in the final minute, why it's important to stay engaged and still come out to vote.
I tell citizens that every part of our lives is determined by some policy that is voted on by some person. And the people who do the voting on only get in those seats if you vote for them. Every part of our lives is determined by a piece of legislation, from where you can build a house, how large it has to be, how small it has to be, where you can zone for institutions, how Norfolk State can expand or not expand, how late can you sell alcohol, what kind of restaurants are able to be where. What's the educational requirement for your doctor? What's the educational requirement for an attorney? What, all of those things are legislated. So every part of our lives has some legislation tied to it. And so what we need to understand is that we need to put people in office who are going to at least listen to us. We are not going to agree on everything. We are married to people. We don't agree with them on everything. So it's unreasonable to think that you're going to agree with your legislator on everything. But find people who have your best interest at heart and whose judgment you trust, or at least you think you trust their judgment, and get out and vote. Because if you don't, what I can tell you is some of the ideology that I see from people who are not in my party is scary when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to freedom of speech, when it comes to freedom to vote, and all of those things. It is really, really scary. And I know for a fact it is harder to undo something than keep it from happening at all.
That's it. And we're going to leave it right there. Senator Angela Williams-Grays, the public servant, advocate, and ambassador for the city of Norfolk. As always, a pleasure to have you here on State of the Water and supporting Norfolk State University.
Thank you.
And as always, continue to join us every single Sunday as we broadcast from the campus of the Norfolk State University, home of the Spartan Nation, from WSB Hot 91, the soul of VA. Until next time, be good, be great, God bless, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Carrie Washington, and you're listening to State of the Water with award-winning host, Dr. Eric Claville.